The third case set for oral argument today is case number A19-771, Andre Agee versus City of Minneapolis and others. Council, I think, are familiar with our rules. Mr. Goins, you may approach and begin. You have 15 minutes.
Judge. And if you can't hear me, please indicate so. This is pretty much the range of my voice at this point of my life.
Understood. I think we hear you just fine.
Very good. Albert Goins, G-O-I-N-S, for the appellant, Andre Agee, Your Honors. We're here on an appeal from the district court's decision denying essentially a Rule 60.02A-F and 602 motions after respondents now brought their motion for summary judgment. And then we brought simultaneous motions to vacate, and we also, of course, opposed their summary judgment. It's important for the court to understand a couple of things, and I think the record is already abundantly clear about what my own personal situation has been over the last few years since approximately the fall of 2016. But this case, after it was filed in July of 2018 and assigned to Judge Susan Burke, went through an entire discovery schedule. It even went to a mediation before His Honor retired Judge Helen Oleski. Only after that entire discovery schedule was completed, and I'm not saying counsel brought, we've heard about surprises today. Wasn't a surprise to me. I've dealt with Ms. McLaren for a couple of go-rounds over the decades. But they brought a motion for summary judgment using 504, and they also relied on the statute of limitations for non-service on the individual officers. If I have time, I'll address that, but that's a far less important issue, although I think the court misconceived the concept of official capacity suits and the claims that would have lay against the City of Minneapolis. And what I know this court well knows is Rule 15 and its relation back rules.
Well, if I understand you, Mr. Goins, isn't Rule 5 the filing of the complaint?
Yes, that's the main issue.
Okay.
That's the main issue.
That's my understanding. Because I mean, would you agree that if you're not successful in getting reversal on that issue, then the Rule 15 motion to amend is moot and so on?
I agree, Judge.
Thank you.
And I don't mean to be abrupt, and if I come off that way, it may be because of my own condition. So I apologize.
No, I'm out of practice. No need to apologize.
Can I maybe take that one step further? And would your client concede, or does your client concede, that Rule 504 was not complied with, including the grace period, which then is why it brings us to 6002.
Well, that's certainly the facts. As if we just focus, Judge Slater, on the grace period, so-called, yes, it was not within that one-year period of time.
And what basis would we have to look at anything other than the one-year grace period?
I'll tell you, Judge,
okay.
Because the interrelation of 6002 and 504 has been plainly, and with no offense to this court or to the Supreme Court, but I think it's been labyrinthine, to say the least. And in this sense, if the court looks carefully, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, and I've had a good look at it, at what happened with 504 after it was enunciated. Lots of lawyers, and I will admit, including me, who grew up on the regime of just as I just said to Mr. Nyvold not long ago, what we used to call pocket service. In other words, you served the complaint. The complaint wasn't filed until the parties were ready. Well, I'm going to have been a lawyer. Well, I came out of law school 40 years ago this spring. This caught many of us by surprise, and I know that counsel has inserted into their brief and their addendum, and they did that before Judge Burke, a decision that was brought before Judge Bernardson in another case I had with the City of Minneapolis. The key, though, Judge, the key is the interpretation of when a party may bring a 6002, either A or F. And the thing that I think was really missed is that until Gams, the Gams against Houghton decision, and the Johnson against City of Duluth decision, which came subsequently, and note, those decisions came, first Gams was August 31, 2016. I'm going to answer your question. And then Johnson was decided in October of 2017. Those, as I see it, are the first cases to ever bring about what I call the, in my brief, and I concede this is a little bit of a different cut, but the so-called automatic dismissal regime. If we look at a case, then I brought a copy for opposing counsel out of, I'm going back to the old procedure of when we have an unpublished case, of Fogarty against Bella. One for each of you. And I can provide one to the court martial if need be. If you go back to Fogarty against Bella, which is a case decided by Judge Kalatowski, and he decided that, in, I believe that was decided in January of 2016, before Gams and before Johnson. Judge Kalatowski specifically, I grant it's an unpublished decision, but I think Judge Kalatowski is a highly respected judge. He determined that the automatic dismissal regime was not instantiated by Rule 504. In saying that, what Judge Kalatowski was saying was that it required, even if a party might be entitled to the relief of a dismissal under 504 for the failure to file within the period, that that motion and the action of the court, the action of the court was required before you started to count the clock for 6002, and specifically 6002A, as we all know, presumably has the 1 year limit. And I'll get to 6002.5 in a minute. That, and Judge Kalatowski in Fogarty against Bella, when he made that decision, he specifically was also relying on another published Court of Appeals decision, and that decision is the Thomas case. And I'll try to find you the citation. Thomas was, I apologize, Your Honors, I'm only finding part of it, but Thomas was apparently at 412 Northwest 2nd, and the relevant portion at page 360. Thomas, in what Judge Kalatowski says in Fogarty is, in Thomas, we rejected the argument that the date of automatic dismissal controls in an analysis of the third rule 6002 factor. In other words, the automatic dismissal regime that begins with Gams, and which I think Judge Ross took even farther with Duluth, where he says, not only is it an automatic dismissal without any action by the opposing party, completely in asymmetry with what we do with default judgments, but he says that even, this is Johnson now, he says that Rule 504 dismissal by mere operation of rule counts as a proceeding. That takes it, I think, even a step further. I don't know of how any lawyers that were on notice of that. And the key is the way it creates the timing for 6002. Now, does this have anything to do with me and this case? Well, as the trial court noted, that is when I got sick. I got sick in August. Well, I'm going to be totally candid with the court, at least as best I can. August 30 of 2016, I'm diagnosed. On November of, in fact, it was Election Day, great day, Election Day of 2016, I have my first surgery. A week later, I have my second surgery. I don't know how much detail the court needs. And then on November 29th of that same year, I went into what is called a myasthenic crisis, which caused me to be in ICU, and I'm essentially out of commission. counsel, of course, knows this. I know she doesn't deny it. That essentially, with the other case that was outstanding, which counsel seems to make something up, which was a federal action on behalf of Mr. Hagee, a separate incident, I was required by Magistrate Judge Menendez to go get associated counsel. I couldn't get to the court to do even scheduling conferences or settlement conferences, and that's pointed out in the brief. So when counsel and when the trial court look at the timing for bringing a motion within the time that one would have known that this was that the automatic dismissal regime was in place, I'm out of commission. It's for that reason, Your Honors, that I argue that 6002F, even if in a literal technical sense, 6002A may not be available, which I think would be highly unfair, if not quite draconian. The fact of the newness, the unanticipated nature of the interpretation of the rule, and I know you all know, and an opposing counsel well knows what 504 says. But given the, I think, highly unanticipated nature of that interpretation of the rule and its effect, that should give rise to a basis for any other reason which justifies relief under 6002F, Your Honors.
Mr. Glanz, could I inquire? It sounds to me largely what you are addressing is the same due process argument that GAMS talks about in terms of whether in that case the party had sufficient notice of the 1 year, which the court seemed to address in some detail, that that's the grace period provided that notice, and then talked about other publications and ways of access to information. And I know you disagree with that decision, but obviously we're bound by that decision. What do we do otherwise with that when they've addressed really that due process argument that you're raising now, notwithstanding these dates and these rules that led to Judge Burke's decision?
I think that, Judge, if I might, Judge Sleater, I'm not totally relying on just due process in the strict sense. I think that what we have here is an unanticipated interpretation and application of the rule. I think if one looks at 504 and its literal words, there is nothing in 504 that says, and the case shall be dismissed and shall be treated as if the judgment had been entered from the date of failure to file. Let me address it with this. I had a big, long speech to give you, but I see I don't have time. What we have here is an absolute asymmetry with respect to Rule 504 and a very common rule we all know well, 5501 and its component rules, which, of course, would be Rule 4 and 12, which calls for a default judgment. There is no context that I know of, Your Honor, in which we say a person who's faced with a default judgment, that default judgment period to seek 6002 relief, and let's just focus on A, would begin to run from the date that they are defaulting or that they failed to answer. I just did a default judgment. I think I've only got 3.5 or so cases left. I just did a default judgment from Judge Gruen to renew a judgment. Now, that defendant failed to answer back in April or August or something, and I did it in December. Does his time to move under 6002 run from the date he defaulted? No. His time to move or seek relief runs from the date Judge Gruen entered her judgment, which is just this month. That is the new and unanticipated application of Rule 504. Counsel likes to point to the case that I was involved in Hennepin County with Her Honor Judge Berenson. I looked at that case, Nowhere did she say, and it's an automatic dismissal, and it relates back. Now, that case was settled, and I've argued it shouldn't be considered. But if you consider that, there was no interpretation, and I'm happy I could be wrong, but there was no interpretation, I think, certainly of viewing things as a proceeding from which the date would run, it's effectively retroactively, until Johnson, until Judge Ross issued his opinion. And GAMS does have automatic dismissal language, but it wasn't reached because the Supreme Court, and I see my time's up, Supreme Court remanded that case for the failure of findings. And when I come back up, I'd like to address the fact that I think Judge Burke totally misapprehended the idea of excusable neglect. I'll come back up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goins. As, yes, you will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Rebecca Christosik, and I represent the City of Minneapolis in this matter. This is a case about timing, and once the timeline of events in this case is clear, the issues presented before this court are resolved squarely by the plain language of the rule and by the precedent of this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court. Today, rather than delving into each of the many issues raised on appeal, I plan to focus narrowly on the timeline, why in light of that timeline, appellant is not entitled to the redress he seeks, and why summary judgment was the appropriate disposition of this case. Turning first to the timeline. The underlying events in this case occurred in 2003 and 2004. Appellant served the city, but not the individual defendants, in 2005, and very limited discovery took place. In fact, there's in our file on the case, there is an email, I think, dating to 2010, in which counsel inquired to appellant about the status of overdue discovery responses, which were not received. In July 2013, as you're aware, the Minnesota Supreme Court promulgated an amendment to Rule 5.04A of the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure, and the order and the rule made clear that cases pending as of that date must be filed within 1 year of the order, so by July 1st, 2014. Mr. Agee's case was not filed in the district court by that date, and by operation of Rule 5.04A, it was automatically deemed dismissed with prejudice as of July 1st, 2014. Under Rule 60.02A of the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure, a party may seek relief from operation of a judgment for mistake, surprise, inadvertence, or excusable neglect, but only if the motion is brought within a one-year period of time. For examples in which a party sought relief under Rule 60.02A but did not bring that motion timely, I would direct your honors to Johnson versus City of Duluth and also to Chapman versus Special Schools District. Both of those cases are cases in which the parties were misled by counsel, and I'm not suggesting that that's what occurred in this case, but they were very sympathetic circumstances. Counsel let them know that the cases had been proceeding even though they had been dismissed with prejudice, and ultimately both of the parties in that case sought new counsel, brought a motion under Rule 60.02A, and the precedential decisions in those cases were that relief was not available to the parties under Rule 60.02A. As counsel alluded to, in February of 2015, before the expiration of the Rule 60.02A deadline, a case was dismissed in federal district court in which Mr. Goins was counsel for failure to comply with the Rule 5.04A filing deadline. To be clear, actual notice is not required for Rule 5.04A to have effect in terms of the automatic dismissal. But in this case, we know that counsel was on notice, and As mentioned in our brief, Mr. Agee actively litigated a case against the city between June of 2016 and June of 2018. And in the course of that litigation, in a deposition he gave, he acknowledged that this lawsuit before the court now had not been timely filed.
Ms. Christosik,
what's
the relevance, and counsel brought that up a few times, both in his reply brief, I think, and today, what's the relevance of this other litigation as it applies to these timing rules that we're considering?
Certainly, I can address that, Your Honor. The relevance, and I would say that it has been put at issue by appellant in saying that they were not able, for reasons of excusable neglect or what have you, to bring the motion until July of 2018. But the active litigation, even if it was primarily litigated by other counsel and not by Mr. Goins, sort of it renders that argument void.
Isn't your legal point, though, that excusable neglect, we can presume it to have existed, is time barred? And since that's the 6002A, that it wouldn't matter what the excusable neglect is and was, which we can even presume that it existed, but simply because it's time barred under 6002A and there's no allegation of an other basis under F.
Certainly, Your Honor. I can address that. Not only is it time barred, and this is a critical point that I wanted to make sure I touched on, as a matter of common sense, an excuse for a failure to act must precede the failure to act. So if I have a brief that's due today and I don't timely file it, and tomorrow I get in a car accident, that car accident, however serious, is not a valid excuse for my failure to file the brief today. The rule 5.04A filing deadline expired in July of 2014. The rule 60.02A motion filing deadline expired in July of 2015. Mr. Goins, and with all due consideration for the seriousness of his illness, that's not in dispute, Mr. Goins was not diagnosed until 2016, more than a year after the Rule 60.02A filing deadline, and more than 2 years after the Rule 5.04A filing deadline. So not only was the motion not timely brought, it's simply not a reasonable excuse under 5.04A or under 60.02A or under 60.02F. The timeliness factor under Clause A is dispositive. No other analysis is required by the court. Turning to
it was the point, we get to the point in your analysis that connects with Mr. Goins' oral argument at the beginning. I mean, he pointed out that the case law in early 2016 indicated that the automatic dismissal is not, if I understand his argument correctly, the argument is that in early 2016 there was case law from this court saying or suggesting that a Rule 60.02 motion does not run from the date of the end of the grace period, but rather from some other date. And so how would you respond to that?
I would respond to that by saying, as an initial matter, that the Rule 5.04A grace period was made very clear and that it was widely publicized. That's an issue that's addressed squarely in GAMS under the due process argument. And notwithstanding the fact that it wasn't immediately clear, perhaps, to counsel that under Rule 60.02A, that one-year period started to run, other parties have been held to that standard, for instance, in Johnson versus City of Duluth. You know, the counsel in that case, and that case is a precedential one, were also not on notice that that had started to run, and yet he was held to the plain language one-year motion filing period under Rule 60.02A.
Ms. Krzysztofski, the city had brought a summary judgment motion. Given GAM's confirmation of the phrase deemed being dismissed, did the city have to bring that? What did that add to the judge granting summary judgment instead of simply finding under 504 and 6002 that it indeed is deemed dismissed, which that court in GAM seems to confirm that's sufficient?
Certainly. I can address that, Your Honor. There are a number of precedential cases that say no action is required on the part of either the defendant or the district court in order for this automatic dismissal to occur. I will say that in August of 2018, which was within a matter of weeks of the case finally being filed in district court, counsel for the city, Ms. McLaren, sought permission from the district court to bring a Rule 12 motion on the basis of failure to prosecute, on the basis of the Rule 5.04 automatic dismissal, and I believe also with respect to insufficient service of process on the individual defendants. The district court ordered the parties to engage in discovery and also to participate in a mediation, and you know, the city was not in a position to disregard the court's order, and so it brought a summary judgment motion to dispose of the case as soon as it was able. And so,
was discovery limited to certain issues?
I at that time did not work for the city, and it was not limited, Your Honor. No, I'm sorry. As far as the appropriateness of summary judgment on this matter, I want to point out that there were no issues of material fact. The failure to comply with the Rule 5.04A motion filing deadline is not in dispute. The failure to comply with the Rule 60.02A motion filing deadline is not in dispute. And under Rule 60.02F, there are a couple of requirements for relief. The first, as set forth in our brief, is that, and the case law acknowledges this, both this court's decisions and the Minnesota Supreme Court's decisions acknowledge that clauses A and F under 60.02, they are mutually exclusive. And here, appellant hasn't put forth any reasons that would bring them outside of the operation of A. More importantly, the reasons that they put forward are not actually excuses for failure to file, because again, they occurred after the failure to file had occurred. And the idea that because something happens after you miss a deadline, you should be excused from that deadline, it's simply untenable in our legal system.
Counsel, you hit on part of why I asked about the summary judgment.
Sure.
It's not your standard. When you say there's no issues of material fact, the court did not analyze under Rule 55 what we normally would see under the merits, the factual
Correct.
Merits, but you're referring to the procedural merits, which makes summary judgment a bit unusual or unique,
it
perhaps,
is,
here,
Your Honor.
And again, almost redundant as I see the GAM's decision and even the Johnson decision, really, it was just a matter of the Rule 6002
right.
dismissal.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's what you mean when you say there's no genuine, you're referring to the timelines, there's no dispute in terms of what did or did not happen during that time.
Certainly. The underlying facts giving rise to Mr. Agee's claims are simply not at issue in this case. The issues before this court are purely legal, and they are entirely dependent on the Rule 5.04A analysis, which is quite straightforward, the Rule 60.02A and F analysis, which is also straightforward. And going back to that, under F, a party must not only put forth a reason not covered by Clause A, but it must be exceptional circumstances. And again, the circumstances put forth by appellant didn't predate the failure to file. And finally, under 60.02F, relief must be sought within a reasonable time. The case law is very clear on this point, and We know that Mr. Goins knew, at least as of February 2015, that this lawsuit had not been timely filed and was on actual notice of Rule 5.04A. And we also know that as of April 2017, a year and 3 months before this action was filed, that he acknowledged in a deposition that this lawsuit had essentially lapsed, were his words. And so I briefly want to address this case, Fogarty. I don't believe it was cited in any of the briefs. It's not precedential. But furthermore, I would distinguish it on the basis that this was a timely motion brought under Rule 60.02A. That's on page 3, I believe. And it was also a finding by the district court that the movements acted diligently upon discovery of dismissal, bringing the motion 6 months after the deemed dismissal. Here, the motion under 60.02A was brought more than 4 years after the deemed dismissal. I think unless the court has any further questions, I would simply conclude by asking this court to affirm the district court on all grounds. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goins, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm going to work backwards if I can. I don't think counsel, and I appreciate that she wasn't involved in the discovery. The discovery was broad. It was trial discovery. And we did everything as if we were getting trial ready. There were depositions of witnesses, of the officers. There's absolutely no prejudice with respect to that. The rule, at least as I recall it, is that we're supposed to decide cases on the merits. The construction of 504 that respondents are seeking is not only draconian and harsh, but I will venture to say it creates a sort of a gotcha approach to the rules of civil procedure. I don't think counsel quite, and I understand she's here to be an advocate, but I don't know if she was following as best, at least I hope I can explain. The issue is not timeliness with respect to the regime of automatic dismissal. That didn't exist until GAMS. That didn't exist in its even more extensive sense until Johnson. So the issue is not how quickly did someone bring the motion as set forth in the Fogarty case. The issue, as Judge Kalitowski pointed out in relying on another Court of Appeals decision in Thomas, is that the obligation to move to vacate began prior to the automatic dismissal regime in GAMS, from the time you first learned of the motion to enforce the 504 dismissal. That's what happened with their colleague in the case that they brought the order from Judge Bernardson with. It seems to me at that point, and I'm only speculating, that given the state of the law, had that case not settled, I could have brought a 60.02 motion. So the question is, what is reasonable?
I was going to say, if I may interrupt here, hey, Mr. Goins, is the question, or is another way to state the question, whether the opinions of GAMS and Johnson apply retroactively? I mean, because essentially, I think what you're saying is that at the time when you needed to take action, as we know now based on GAMS, or knew later based on GAMS,
sir,
you were unaware of the need to take action. And that's your argument, I think. And so, but isn't it generally true that our case law does apply generally retroactively? I mean statutes and different, but when the case law gives us new interpretations of the existing rules and statutes, generally those cases apply retroactively. So,
yes, and there's very specific rules in criminal law that aren't at issue here. But then the issue becomes, when should 62OF be able to be triggered? Because as I understand, and I haven't gone back to the old rule books, 62OF used to read, I believe, and perhaps I'm thinking of the federal rule, any other reason for relief from the rule, justifying relief from the rule, R says from the judgment I looked at early this morning. Any other reason for relief would be that, and I counted it out for the court, as of the time that GAMS was decided, I had 2 months, August 31, to when I ended up down the street, if I had known about it, to bring the motion. From that time on, and I don't think this is conceded if we're talking summary judgment, Judge Sleater, and the facts that are procedurally there from summary judgment that are being construed to be construed in the way most favorable to the non-moving party. Then from that time on, I'm out. I'm out, down, almost down for the count. Now, the fact that they have a statement and a deposition in a different case, and by the way, there was no federal case dismissed under 504. That's counsel's just lack of familiarity with the procedural.
May I interrupt again just in response to what you just said? Are you referring to this court's opinion in GAMS? I think it's, so looking at your table of authorities, this court issued its GAMS opinion in August of 2015.
And then the Supreme Court, I believe, came out in August 31st, I believe, Judge Nye, I may be incorrect, but I'm sure the court can take judicial notice.
But even by the time our court, and I can't remember whether our court was reversed or affirmed, but even by the time our court's opinion had come out, we were already past, 1 year past the grace period.
My point is this, Judge. Based on what Judge Kalatowski had ruled and based on the precedent, which is precedential, in the Thomas case, the duty on a party to bring the motion to vacate didn't begin until notice of entry of a judgment. That meant, as I've tried to indicate inartfully, as in the default judgment arena, your obligation to bring that Rule 60.02a motion doesn't start from the time you default. Within that 20 days after you fail to answer the complaint, it starts from the time that the other party brings their motion for default judgment and the court grants it, presumably after they looked at the Fendon factors. So my issue here is, yes, there is 62OF basis for relief. And I don't believe, if you look at the opinion of Judge Burke, who's a good judge, I don't believe she even considered it. She just said it, which I think is incorrect. If 60.02a doesn't apply, you're out for 62.0f. That's not the law. And the Johnson case, of course, I'll end with this, never even dealt with 62.0f because those parties failed to raise it. And I think that the other case, the school case, which is escaping me, that case likewise is another reason. The Minneapolis School District case.
Chapman.
Thank you, Judge. The Chapman decision is also not clear about that in this context of Rule 504A. I don't know where the courts have gone on this. I do know that my friend Gus Niclo was able to ask Judge Rodenberg, and Judge Rodenberg remanded, and I looked carefully to see if it dealt with 60.02A or 60.02F, and that was beyond the one-year period. And that was remanded for findings on that. I see I'm out of time, but I believe that the court should at least remand to determine if 62OF applies as any other reason justifying relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goins. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion within 90 days.
Thank you very much.
That is the final case for oral argument on today's calendar, so the court is now in recess.